Yes,
including
yes,
all over the world. I mean, there's definitely, I'm in full favour of it, a working class and a capitalist class. It's not the capitalists we're against. It's been said here several times, and I do think we didn't hear it. It's the system, the capitalist system we're against, that does not work in our interest. It does not work in the working class's interest. In relation to the wealth, the luxury, the privilege that this handful of people all over the world live in and exist in, and compared to what we have, the majority of the world's population, who are doing all the employment out there, building the houses, the roads, the sewers, making the bombs to go and kill other members of the working class and all this nonsense, we live in poverty. It is a class issue.
I'd like to say this, to what you just said there, right? If you say that to me, and since I own a few factories in certain parts of East LA, just kidding.
Right, fair enough.
I would say, after your speech there, I'd say, man, the reason why we have these inequalities and the reason why we have these patterns of suffering and destitution and so on is that those people are dumb. They're naturally inferior, and that's why they are in that particular station in life. It has nothing to do with me. Indeed, I was born to that class, and I pulled myself up through my own efforts. So I don't understand why you think that somehow I'm the enemy. They are their own enemies. They're dissolute. They have no discipline. They're culturally backward. They're trapped in poverty because of their own inefficiencies and their own intellectual and moral backwardness. So why are you pointing a finger at me and saying that somehow I'm the cause of their problems?
I am not, neither is anyone here. There's a misconception here. It is not the capitalist. A capitalist is much bigger than you seem to portray. A couple of factories or one supermarket on the end of the street does not a capitalist make you. I have met women, working class women, elderly women, in Maidstone, sitting at a bus stop, telling me they're a capitalist. Where's your yacht? Where's your plane? Not all capitalists have the luxury goods, but I would expect you to be doing that rather than sitting at a bus stop. There's a misconception amongst members of the working class that somehow they're middle class, or somehow they're, because they do a bit of freelance work and get a cheque in the post, or they get some remuneration some other way rather than a wage or salary, that they are not members of the working class. There's a misconception. It's not the capitalist. It is the system we're against.
Okay.
What we live
can
in,
I ask a couple
we
of questions?
Say we can change
okay,
it.
Okay, a couple of questions. It seems to me that there's a danger here. I could be wrong, but correct me if I'm wrong. Because you seem to be saying you are going to define people and classify them and identify them whether they like it or not.
No.
So, well, you are because you're saying that you're saying, look, you remember the working class, whatever you say. You don't own the means of production. Suppose I were to say no. Let's say I don't own the means of production, right? I'm just, shall we say, I work in a factory in East End. And I say, I'm not a member of the working class. Are you going to say, yes, I am?
If you're working for a wage salary?
Yes. You're going to say, yes, I am?
Well, yes.
Oh, good. So you are going to tell me how I'm to be defined, whether I like it or not?
No. We're going to explain or persuade you that you are of that class.
Well, I hear you. That's what I'm asking you. I'm asking you.
You don't have to agree.
Well, okay, but that's my point. So you are telling me, you're defining me in a certain way. But you say I'm a member of the working class.
Yes.
Right? And I disagree. But you are not convinced. You will still say I'm a member of the working class.
Yes.
You're not going to agree with me.
No.
So my perception of myself is not relevant.
When you put it like that, it gets a bit dodgy.
It's a Socrates.
The point is, it's class. If you talk to me, I'm going to say, if you're doing that, you're a member of the working class.
But we're not asking my question, though. You're saying, I'm saying, this is my point. It doesn't matter what I say about myself, how I classify myself, what matters is how you classify me.
Well, from the point of a member of the party, the other thing is, why do members of the working class not want to know who they are? They get really upset if you tell them they're working class. You know, they don't really hear that they're poor.
That's where we started. 1, 2, 3. You.
Yes, well, Carlos, it isn't a matter of choice, you know, because you choose what you are.
It's not?
No. It's your economic
political choice.
What I wanted to say is when we talk to people, as we do, we don't always start out from the position of class. I mean, we're not talking in a vacuum. There are all kinds of problems going on. There are problems, for example, in the steel industry. There's a problem within capitalism of overproduction. Factories shutting down and workers.
Of course.
You know, what are we going to do? Losing our jobs. So there are all kinds of problems that you mentioned of the environment and all kinds of problems. And you start off talking to people on some problem, not out of the blue, but, you know, some problem. And you start from there and you talk about, there's something wrong with the capitalist system, that the world should be owned in common by all of it.
Who's in charge of the system? Who is in charge of it? Because it's not the capitalist class.
Nobody's in charge.
Okay, so if nobody's in charge of the system, whom do we have to address if we change the system? Whom do we have to address? If nobody's in charge and there's no one to address?
Right, we're finished.
No, well, it's if you think that there is no one in charge, then it is up to us, it is up to people to make sure that we become in charge, that instead of this anarchic system of production for sale and profit and things going wrong, all kinds of crises, economic crisis and so on, that the system cannot operate without and wars and so on. If we want to deal with the problems, we say that socialism, common ownership, is the way to solve the problems. This is not perfection. Here we are, we hand it to you. This is the way to solve the multiplicity of problems, to have a different kind of world that has to be organised, that has to have some sort of administration, but it's the administration of things in the old phrase, and it's people actually being in charge for the first.
That gentleman has his hand up. I'd like him to ask the question. I'll get back to what you just said. Somebody else?
Yes, Yehuda. I'd like to know how do you suggest that we change our perception of ourselves?
Have we changed what?
Our perception of ourselves and each other. You've told us how, or you've suggested ways of how we perceive each other.
Yes.
Do you suggest we change that?
Well, I think that's a difficult question. It's complex for this reason. I have a diagram somewhere which I call Gretchen. I'm interested in presenting different options to people, options for self-identification. I don't believe people have identities. I say people have identifications, not identities. The word is too fixed. I define myself differently under different circumstances. When I'm in Iraq, I don't say I'm an American. Obviously, dangerous, right? And certainly, so I have a acronym I call GRECHEW, GRECHEW, which means this. I'd like people to become what I call CUT, to become conscious users of theories. Know the theory in your head that you're using, rather, when you define yourself. And realize that you have options. So become a conscious user of theories. So if I refer to myself as a man, if I call myself a man, which I do not do, it's because I'm using what I call a gender theory of society, and if you like, of history, because I'm referring to my genitalia in order to classify myself. It's a terrible mistake, because I'm not my genitalia. I have a certain kind of genitalia, but that's not me. And it's very arbitrary for me to select my genitalia and identify my total self. And I suppose I can say the same about class. It's arbitrary to take my relationship to the means of production, the fact that I don't own a piece of production, and on that basis call myself a member of the working class. What does the word member mean? Why am I selecting this particular condition that I face, that is not only the means of production, and on that basis saying I'm a member of the working class? It seems to me to be logically loose. So, gender. I can say I'm a man, very debatable. What's a man? If we check your chromosomes recently and so on and so forth, we can have a long debate as to how to define a man. And then there's R, race. I can say, anyone can say, I'm white or I'm black. But that's nonsense. You're a human being with a particular skin color. is not you. You're not a color. Your skin may be white or gray or pink or dark, but that's not you. So you can't say you're black because you've got dark brown or black skin color, and you certainly can't say you're white. Nobody here is white or black for that matter. Moving on. E. I can define myself, or people do. Let me stop saying I. People define themselves in terms of their so-called culture or their ethnicity. I'm Polish, or I'm an American, because I speak American English, or I speak Polish, I like Polish food, and so on and so forth, and so I say I define myself in terms of my culture. Dangerous. There's hundreds of definitions of culture. In any case, people are bicultural or multicultural. So why are you choosing that to define yourself ethnically? Then C, class, which is where most of you are here. Very, very debatable. I have the same objections. Why are you selecting this particular condition? Your relation to the means of production, to identify your totality. You are an infinity of attributes. Why select that particular one to name your entire self? Rather arbitrary. H, I'm a human being. Better than class, certainly. Much broader, more inclusive. But also, you may say, debatable. Well, what do you mean you say you're a human being? Well, there's one good thing about saying you're a human being. There's one attribute, one characteristic of that definition that's not possessed by the others. What's that? If I try to deny it, I prove it. If I were to say I'm not a human being, I actually demonstrate that I am, because only a human being can use language that way. So, I'm saying it's irrefutable. The GREC, gender, race, ethnicity, class, refutable. Human, irrefutable. If I say I'm not a human being, you know, you laugh your head off. Because in using language that way, or in using language, I'm demonstrating that I'm human. And then we can move on. Earthling. I mentioned that before. Why that? Well, I was born on Earth. In fact, I should have mentioned this before. If I say I'm an American or English, debatable. Why? Why are you English? I was born in England. You were not. You were born in a bed. You're a Bedian. We're all Bedians. So I don't know why you think that where you were born identifies you. You were born in the uterus when the zygote was produced by the sperm and the egg meeting. So where you were born, very debatable. And ultimately, earthling to W, wonderling of the universe, which I mentioned. Sir, please go ahead.
This wasn't yours.
Thank you. I think it's a bit unfair saying you're dictating who I... You said you're dictating to what I am just a moment ago.
I said what?
You're dictating to somebody what they are.
Yes.
I think that's a very unfair response to that. I thought quite a valid question and analysis, because we are defined by our society what we are, and they tell us what sort of person we are, what we live to. The individual has very little choice in most cases to be able to actually have an input on this definition. So to actually talk to someone and say, have this conversation with someone is a debate that needs to happen. So it's valid to say you're not a capitalist, you're actually something else, because it's a debate which brings upon it with intellectual outcomes and proofs, and is a very, very important debate.
Okay, a couple of responses. First of all, you said it's unfair, and I'm not sure it was unfair, because all I tried to say is, look, I asked her if there's a difference between the way she defines me, sorry to say she, and the way I define myself, which one is valid? Which one is to be chosen?
It's a debate.
Pardon? I know, well, I agree with the debate, but you see, debates can have conclusions. People can reach a consensus during a debate. So I wanted to ask her, I think I did. If she, what's your name again, please?
Jacqueline.
If Jacqueline were to say, I am a member of the working class, which I think she would say,
yeah.
And I were to say, I am not, which of those sayings would she accept?
It doesn't matter. It's the debate that's important, and it must be had. This back conversation is absolutely vital to having this.
But I'm not saying end the debate.
Good.
I didn't say that.
But the way you kind of closed down that conversation with Metler over there.
Actually, Adam did.
The way you closed down is saying, you're defining who I am. That was closing it down.
Well, Well, I'm not. Well, okay. I take your point when you said I'm closing it down. You said I'm closing it down. I think what
it's
I
not
thought.
Fair. It's a debate, not telling someone else.
Well,
thank you.
Well, I thought Jacqueline was saying that my question to her was, if there's a, if we have two different perspectives on an object, my identity, so to speak, on what basis do we decide which one is correct? That's my question, isn't it? If we have two different perspectives on an object, on what criteria, what standards would be used to decide which one to choose? So I asked her, is it the one that she's offering, saying I'm working fast, or will it be mine? That's all I ask. I don't think I'm shutting anything.
Not when you word it like that. No.
I thought that's what I was doing.
Right.
But you want But I think something lost the thought. Good heavens! Come back, please. It was about the working class. Who spoke before? Was it you? Who spoke before? Was it you? What were you saying?
How are we going to change perception of ourselves? Because...
Yes, how do we change
perception? I think I'm a capitalist. No matter how much I think I am, it doesn't make me one.
Correct.
That's not good.
Meet you at the bus stop.
Okay, you think you're a capitalist?
No.
Hypothetically.
Yes.
That's
my perception of myself.
That's your perception of yourself.
It doesn't make me one.
But then, if that's correct, then that applies also to Jackton's perception of herself as a member of the working class. Her perception of herself as a member of the working class doesn't make her one.
Oh, yes, it does.
It does.
But why? No, but let's be careful here.
I've got credentials.
Well, you see, here is a problem.
I'm not a member of the
why is it in this case, her perception of herself as a capitalist class is invalid. It doesn't make her one. But in your case, your perception of yourself as a member of the working class is by definition. How can you do that? That's so arbitrary. There's a double standard here. When she says she's a capitalist, you say no, you're not. But when you say you're working class, yes. Why? That's arbitrary.
Can we capture all this? This is fairly irrelevant.
Can
I ask you a question? Do you think the human race would be better served if it had a global society of common ownership? Socialism. Yes or no?
I'm sorry, I've walked up to you.
Okay.
Thank you
for coming.
Is it in the interest of humankind to move on from the system of private ownership of the means of production to one of common ownership? What's your view of that?
Well,
I thought it was quite clear when you set off today. I thought it was quite clear what your views were.
Well, I don't think I've changed my views between 3 o'clock and now. But I think that I'd like to make sure that we have a common conception of common ownership.
Which I think we have.
I'd like to make sure.
We do.
I said I'd like to make sure.
Well, I think we know what common ownership means. It means everything owned in common, or everything not owned by any particular person or group of persons.
I think it's dangerous to everything, because... You don't mean my car.
No, I'm talking about means of production. Your car is not a means of production.
That's what I asked.
It's a personal possession.
That's a commodity.
Well,
you know what means of production are.
I said I want to be clear. So you said everything, and I said no.
I said means of production.
Oh, okay.
The means of production must be. You know what means of production?
Yes, I do.
Right.
Okay. So
that's what we mean by common ownership.
The means of production.
We're not talking about common ownership of your toothbrush or anything like that, or your motor car, or the clothes that you're wearing. We're not talking about that. You know, we're not talking about that.
So the question then would be. Do I believe...
Is this a form of social organisation that would be advantageous to the human race? Yes or no?
Slowly. You see, I could say yes very quickly, but I don't want to. I don't want to because I think I'd prefer to clothe the thought that I think we share a different way. I am committed to the RDA. Of ending commodity production and ending wage labour. Now, absolutely. Now, that involves abolishing what Marx called private ownership of the means of production. But I think there are all kinds of problems with that notion. And one of the reasons why you should all think that way is clearly, look what happened in the Soviet Union. They tried to abolish private ownership of the means of production. And we know.
Well, we know why they weren't successful, don't we?
Yeah.
We know why they weren't successful.
Yes. Pardon?
You can carry on here.
Yes, okay. So that's why I'm saying that I understand perfectly what you're saying, and I think we share that aspiration, but I'd like to close the thought that you expressed in a different way, because to my mind, I'd like to talk about the necessity of abolishing commodity production and wage labour. That having people have access to the means of life by going to work every morning, or it's called a 40-40-40 treadmill. I like this analogy, where you work for 40 hours a week for 40 years of your life, then you are asked to live on 40% of what you used to earn. Barbaric. Wage slavery must go. Absolutely. So I think we share that. I think that the institutional and administrative ramifications, how we're going to do that, and whether it involves abolishing private property and so on and so forth, is such a huge debate about that, that I prefer to go slowly here if you put it in terms of, if you close the argument or the thought with the words abolishing, what do you say, introducing common ownership. It's very complex. I think I mentioned it earlier. In Yugoslavia, they had so-called workers' councils. That was one way. That is to say, the workers themselves in the factories would meet and discuss and debate and decide on all the labour processes in particular factories. Didn't quite work out, because how do you coordinate with other factories? And then how do you coordinate with other countries? So even if you abolish common ownership or you abolish private ownership in one country, does it automatically mean you're going to have it throughout the world? So this is why you saw me pausing, not because I disagree with the thought, but I think it's complex, and so we have to think about it before I answer. But I think it's easier to say, let's get rid of wage labour and producing commodities, let's produce goods and make them fully accessible to human beings throughout the entire planet. I prefer to put it that way.
Supplementary question. How do we do that then?
Yeah.
Do you suggest that we elect people in order to do it for us? Or would you suggest, or would you agree with us, that the only way we can do that is by getting a sufficient number of people, of members of the working class, right?
Yes.
That's just why we say class. We get sufficient number of members of the working class to agree that it's in their best interest to do so.
I think I'd like to persuade sufficient members of the human species, not approaching with any a priori division of people
into.
We've
been there. We've been there.
Well, the capitalist class are not going to relinquish the ownership of means of production, are they?
Pardon?
The members, those who presently own the means of production, are not going to, in the main, relinquish that ownership, are they? Why would they?
I don't know if it's correct to make that assertion.
Well,
let me say why I don't think it's...
Why aren't they philanthropists and establish a world of common ownership now, then, if that's the case?
Well, it could be. Maybe one reason that they're not doing that is because your arguments are not persuasive enough. Let me put it this way. Clearly, let's go along with your division, the capitalist class and the working class. I think that what follows from that is an implication, an assertion, not fully expressed here, except by the gentleman over there, that these two groups have different interests, competing interests, and they cannot be bridged with just words. In other words, what I'm saying appears to be so idealistic and utopian and even counter-revolutionary and so on and so forth, which is what I hear coming from you to some extent. But that's not the case. What I'm suggesting is that I don't want to make this a priori distinction among human beings and approach them with this preconception that they are members of any particular class, because I suspect that that can affect the way they receive my message. So if I approach them in a priori in advance, telling them that I think they are members of the capitalist class or they're part of the capitalist system, and that I am representing the working class, the majority of the people in the world, who are viciously exploited, I think I'm setting myself up for failure. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to fail. I also think that maybe the reason why there's been no success so far in converting those people, in generating behavior modification, in making them abandon this vicious, inhuman system, I think the reason could be that philosophers and theologians have not developed their capacity to reason, their darhu, so that they are working against their own interests as human beings and as earthlings. I'm going to go back with Socrates here. They're ignorant. They need to be properly educated. And I'm not saying this as if to say I'm educated and I know better than them and so on and so forth. No, I want to engage in debate with them and persuade them that, look, the productive forces throughout the world are developed. They have the capabilities of giving you PBS, permanent biological self-realization. You don't have to continue owning factories in order to have full access to Maseratis and make trips to the moon. The wealth is there, the productive forces are developed. Human resources are being wasted. 2 billion people are illiterate. Maybe you have some Einsteins there. Let's open schools throughout the world so that we can actually generate individuals who can produce more wealth. You are engaged in a fruitless and unnecessary struggle, fighting against your workers and paying them minimal wages and so on. You don't need to do it. There's enough wealth, the productive forces are developed enough so you can have all the fancy goods you want in the world without the system that you maintain. I think they can be persuaded. If they're not being persuaded, it's because our message is not strong enough. It's not rational enough. We haven't really... Let me put it differently. I was asking my nephew this the other night, how do you change people's behavior? How do we get them to change their perceptions and their actions? We can show them that what they're doing is counterproductive. It's against their own interests. And it's filled with self-contradictions, with contradictions. I think that's all we can do. When we reach the point at which we tell a person, look, you are saying yes and no at the same time, stop it. Because when you do that, you're not communicating. And so you're saying, you want economic security. This is this owner of the means of production. You want economic security. You want to live in a world in which you have access to all the goodies in the world for you and your children and your children's children. And you think that by owning the means of production and paying people you call your workers minimum wages, you're going to get that. No, you're not. You're not getting that. You're living also in a world filled with conflict and dissension. You have 2 psychiatrists. You've had 3 or 4 wives or husbands. Your children hate you. I can point to host of problems that accompany your ownership of the means of production. You don't need to live this way. But above all, I'll say, you know something? Before we start talking, let's see if we can agree on one thing. Can we agree that reasoning, logical reasoning, will rule our conversation, will rule what I say and what you say? Can we agree on that? That you will not use ad hominem? That you not call me a Marxist or tell me I'm utopian or that I'm a revolutionary? I will not do it to you, you will not do it to me. So once we agree, I think I said this earlier, once we can agree on the conditions or the criteria we will use to assess one another's arguments, then we can have the conversation about whether the system that she or he supports is the best for him or her. Yes, ma'am.
Sure, a second. A collection of £25.66. How much longer do you want to go on for?
What do you do with that money? What do you do with that money?
We use it to pay the rates on this building.
Oh, I see. I better give you some too.
No. Anyway, how much longer do you want to go on for?
Jogi, could I just say once again, our message, the Socialist Party of Great Britain, the SDGB, our message is directed to the working class. Those are the people who will get rid of this system. No one else can do it from them, a friendly capitalist or blah, blah, blah. It is for the working class to understand that position in this society, that this society is no good for them, and get rid of it. Peacefully, if we can, through the vote.
See, the problem is that we know it's a question of appealing to people rationally.
I didn't hear
you talked about we've got to appeal to people's rationality.
Yes.
But what you haven't addressed is the fact that the prevailing and ruling ideas of any epoch are those of the ruling class itself, and that is overwhelmingly what prevents us or the working class as a whole from moving forward. You haven't addressed that issue.
Well, look,
and as far as can I just one mention one
of course, thing?
You've heard of somebody called Warren Buffett, haven't you? Obviously. One of the wealthiest people in the world.
Yes.
He recognises there's a class issue, all right, and a class struggle. He said, there's a class struggle, all right, and my class is winning it. So at least he knows where he stands, even if we don't.
I'm not sure that the fact that he says that doesn't mean it's the gold standard, but that's not important. I'm going to leave that alone. You said something else. You quoted Marx. The ruling ideas are the ideas of the ruling class. That's called a tautology in basic logic, because he has to demonstrate that there is a ruling class. But then, within that definition, within that statement, he's saying the ruling ideas are the ideas of the ruling class. But how can he prove that that class is ruling? I mean, the gentleman there, for example, said something about power. And there's a brilliant book by someone named Stephen Lukes about power. And he argues very persuasively, it seems to me, that we ought to be very careful when we use the term power. And Max Weber abused the word in many ways. And so if you want to say that there's a ruling class, then by implication it has the power and it runs a society. But it's very debatable, because one can argue that that if you say that the ruling class has power, then one can argue that do they have power over the working class? Or do they simply have more power than the working class? Or is it the case that the working class has power? We talked about this earlier. The working class has power, but is not using it. Which is which? And then there's also the question of interest. If ever you say that A has power, more power than B, and Max Weber defined it this way, A has power over B, when A recognizes or realizes his or her will over and above the objection of B. Well, that notion suggests that the interests of A and B are contrary. And I'm suggesting that the interests of the capitalist class and the working class are not contrary. I'm also suggesting that it is possible to rationally persuade people you call the capitalist class that they should join me and change the system. I'm going to say it again. I believe in the power of the intellect of the working class. I have a thing to say. I believe in the power of the human mind. I believe in the power of reasoning. I shouldn't say that sounds almost Christian. I want to put it differently. I'm saying it's possible to approach individuals and persuade them, if you specify the conditions, what I call the epistemological conditions, to persuade them to change their behaviors. Now, if we live in a society in which there is no respect for reasoning, in which people appear to say yes and no at the same time, then we have a problem. And I said it earlier, that is in a way what we're facing. But I'm saying we're facing it because of that Christian tradition, because Christianity has convinced the human species, or proponents of Christianity have convinced the majority of the human species that their reasoning is ineffective and impotent, that there's nothing they can do about life's conditions, that indeed they need rulers, God, and then a ruling class. Most of the people in this country believe that David Cameron works in their interests. You know that, I know that. Most of them believe in the monarchy. And to some extent, once you persuade people that there's a God that rules the world, all things are possible. Once you persuade them of that, you can persuade them that, yes, you need David Cameron and Queen Elizabeth II. So I think that what we must do, first of all, is develop people's capacity and ability to reason logically. Let's agree on that, and we'll take it from there. But I think if you're not doing that, then you're not doing good revolutionary work. If you're not out there telling people that, look, you must reason logically, let me put it differently. Let me go on the attack here. I think that it seems to me, as I look at some of the Socialist Standard, I don't think there are enough articles in there that emphasize the importance of logical reasoning. I think you must understand that the things that you advocate do demand a high level of abstract reasoning. Worse, or better yet, the things you're advocating go against millennia of indoctrination and bourgeois ideology. You know that, I know that. So why aren't you saying, why aren't you with me here? Why aren't you saying, yes, Yehudi, you're absolutely right. We must pay more attention to developing people's darhu, their disposition to reason, the habit of reasoning, and the urge to evaluate reasoning. I think that's the first step. That's the first step. It seems to me that if you don't do that, you'll never persuade them that they're even members of the working class. If you don't tell that black female, so to speak, look, ma'am, I understand that you think you're a black female, but I also believe that what enjoins us really is the condition of non-ownership of the means of production. And I'd like you to, for a moment or two, not to forget, but to make your blackness insignificant and to regard your non-ownership of the means of production as very important, very significant, and pivotal in terms of changing your life circumstances. That's a lot of language. That's a lot of history. That's a lot of philosophy. If you're going to persuade her to change her mind and to say, you're right, you're my sister in struggle, rather than a white woman, you have to, first of all, persuade her to reason logically. It seems to me. And I can say the same not just about that black female, but about that Polish person out there and that so-called Mexican immigrant. First things first. First things first. Get them to reason logically. And then you can persuade them that their identities as Mexican and Polish and black are harmful to their interests. Yes, ma'am.
But we're fighting a losing battle here. The capitalist class don't want us educated. They don't want us to reason. They deliberately, our education system deliberately keeps us ignorant.
I agree.
And keeps us not questioning.
I agree wholeheartedly.
How do we
deal with that? Become a teacher.
Part of that.
No, I told you, I agree with you. And I spend most of my time saying exactly what you just said there, that there's this carefully cultivated ignorance. But there's one snag. It's quite likely that those people who are doing that are themselves poorly educated. In fact, I have a certain term. What do I call them? I write about it a lot, but I've forgotten the acronym. I live with acronyms all the time. I say they're logically literate and ill-informed. Well, I'm back with Socrates again. You see, I don't want to call him evil. I know they're doing terribly cruel things. I know that 20,000 babies die every single day from hunger, malnutrition, and curable diseases. And there are 2 billion illiterate people in the world. And I can go on about this. And I can tell you a lot about my life, where I was born and brought up, that would shock you absolutely. And I'm not going to go there, because I don't want this to be personal. But I'll say this. First things first, we have to develop people's darhu if we're going to make them recognize the need to change the world, to get rid of commodity production, to establish global common ownership. We have to first get them to think logically. One of the reasons we have to do that is that, for example, most people in the modern world, because of poor education, are hooked on what I call DRR. So when I go and speak to members of the working class, they look at me and say, oh, there's that black guy. There. Ad hominem. They label me racially. And that colors, no pun intended, that colors the way they respond to what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But black people do that every day amongst themselves.
Well, I know that. But what I'm saying...
Some aren't black enough.
Well, the point is, there's this widespread racialization, and I think I wrote a book on that subject, and it affects my level of effectiveness as I try to tell people, you remember the working class, let's join together as workers. There's a black guy talking to me. And if you were to go and talk to some of my countrymen, so to speak, they say, it's a white woman talking to me. And that affects the way they respond to what you're saying. So you have to then logically show them what's wrong, but show them what's illogical about calling themselves whites and blacks and so on and so forth. I think...
That's a long way around.
We do this all the time.
It's a long way around.
We're doing this all the time.
Class gets it. And as a member, you're all equal. Doesn't matter how long you've been here.
Sorry, you had a question over there.
Oh, yeah. Is there a danger that your whole talk is based on classifications? and yet we won't use classifications as the foundation, as a term to as a term that actually defines what you're talking about. You seem to be quite worried about the idea of classification and using anything that does do that, and yet your whole talk is really agreeing with this.
What am I agreeing with?
The fact there is a classification, there is a group of people out there doing this, and they're doing it deliberately,
yes.
And it's a horrible thing.
Yes.
You've made that clear in your talk.
Yes.
But you won't classify this as a group, but you are, by definition of your own talk, classifying them.
No, I'm not. I think you have to make a distinction between pointing to what people are doing and endorsing what they're doing. I didn't call people.
Classification without a name.
I'm not calling people blacks and whites. I'm saying that there are people who call themselves that and who act in a certain way. I'm glad you brought that because I want to say this. We don't have to be subservient to the way we classify by society, which is a point you made earlier. You can be subversive of it. You don't have to be subservient. The fact that people are classifying you in a certain way doesn't oblige you to accept it. On the contrary, you should say, I object to that. And that's why I was posing those dangerous questions to Jacqueline. When I said, look, okay, so we have two different ways of classifying someone. By what criteria do we decide which one is to be accepted? And I'm trying to say, we can become aware of how we classify it, recognize the problems in the way we classify it, and change it, and change our behaviors. So I'm not using any. In fact, I mentioned Gretchen, right? And I did say where my preference is. I did say I prefer to move from gender, past race, past ethnicity, past class, past even human, and say I'm a wanderling of the universe. And I did point out that among those six or seven classifications, I think the human is the most irrefutable, or the irrefutable one. So I don't know if it's correct to say that I'm stuck with any kind of classification. Let me put it this way. Personally, I'm going to classify myself in such a way that maximizes my communication with other human beings.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
I think we've more or less come. You've been speaking non-stop for an
hour. Well done.
Not 5 hours, yes, but only 2.5. But thanks for coming.
This is
one of the longest and best meetings we've had.
Yeah.
Yep. We can continue afterwards upstairs over a cup of tea or in a pub or something.
Well, I've got some vodka here. I'll just continue drinking it. I need it for this conversation.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.